Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome on into the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante, and no, I did not shave over the weekend. Or maybe I did. It already grew back. Either way, beard's still here. The New York Yankees also still here. 2024 season, feel different alert level. We've gone through different levels on this chart already so far this year. First two series of the year, they'd rate a 10 out of 10 on the feels different scale. Next couple of series, depending on how much magic you did or did not believe they had, I don't know, maybe a 6, maybe a 7 on the feels different scale. Go to Baltimore, we're back down to like a 1 or a 2. Because this is how Yankee fans track the season these days, apparently. By amount of magic collected and amount of different felt from 2023. Everyone's favorite catchphrase so far in April and early May. Oh, this is just the 2023 lineup with Juan Soto and Alex Verdugo. Yeah, sure is. You read it derogatorily, you read it derisively. I mean, it's just objectively fact. That is what it is. They were betting on bounce backs from Aaron Judge. They're getting it so far. Bounce back, although he was pretty good last year when healthy. He's been pretty good for the last 10 days or so. Bounce back from Anthony Rizzo. They've actually gotten that lately as well. Bounce back from Giancarlo Stanton, probably the most improbable of all. But he's been effective and valuable when he's been on the field, which so far this year has been all the games. Which leads us into Sunday in Tampa. This is a house of horrors, and it always will be, no matter how good or bad the Rays are. They're about a 500 team so far this year. No matter how good or bad the Yankees are, they're above their high watermark of last year. So again, early May, the return's pretty solid. They won the first game of the series on Friday night, 2-0. Clay Holmes, nervy time, nail-biting in the ninth, still got it done. Lost the second game in just one of the very few games this year that you can immediately just throw in the trash can and go, okay, that wasn't good. Followed by Sunday's game, which is probably, this is crazy to say, considering how many interesting games they've already played this year, but I would wager that since the first series in Houston, I would say all those four, that's right now for me, those are 1, 2, 3, 4, or all tied for the top spot in terms of the game I'll remember the most from already this year and the moments that raised my eyebrows. Like, honestly, opening day, still in mid-May, is the number one game this year where I was like, huh, that's interesting. File that one away. That's not how I expected that to go. The first six innings or so, the complete turn on a dime, the squandered opportunities followed by successful taking advantage of opportunities. Opening day is still my number one. The last game of that Houston series, maybe my number two. The other two belong in the conversation as well. But since the first series of the year, Sunday's game is the first one that I've really noted and said, okay, that wouldn't have gone that way last year. That went completely differently this year. And it was stunning because it mirrored an identical collapse from last May. This year, May 12th, last year, May 7th. We'll talk all about that. I want to bring Thomas Carinante in before we get too deep into it, do our series recap, and have the Luis Gil conversation and the Ron Marinaccio conversation that everybody wants to have. But welcome to the show, Thomas. We'll do this piece by piece. We'll start, obviously, with the moment where we almost pissed our pants because not having it be the Clay Holmes ninth inning on Friday is the upset of the century. If you tap me on the shoulder after that game and told me you will be pissing your pants harder and with more velocity at a different point in this series, I would not have believed you. But why don't you drop an offer off first, and then we can get in all the nitty-gritty.
Absolutely. A lot of convos to have here. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Beautiful Monday. Got some good weather over here. But Caesars Sportsbook is here to cover your first bet up to $1,000. New customers will get a second chance bet up to 1G when you sign up with our code YGY1000. YGY1000. That means if your first bet loses, you will get your full wager returned as a bonus bet up to $1,000. You don't have to bet $1,000, but you can bet up to $1,000, and any of those numbers will be covered. Caesars offers daily profit boosts as well as Caesars rewards credits on every single wager, which can be redeemed for bonuses, sports tickets, and other VIP experiences. Good stuff if you're a member, and signing up with our code YGY1000 not only covers your first bet, but it gets you access to all of those fantastic rewards programs. If you're looking to join Caesars, go and download the app and register with our code, again, YGY1000, to make sure that that first bet is covered. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. You're right. I will say, Friday now, in hindsight, comes in second for the poop your pants moment. But guess what? I didn't watch yesterday. I was on the road. I was moving around, so I didn't get to see. I mean, I saw on the tracker, on the score ticker, what was happening. But mine wasn't even Clay Holmes. It was Friday in the eighth inning. I don't even remember who it was because I was on the phone with my wife, and I screamed, and she thought I dropped a knife on myself or something. It was when Luke Weaver came in the bottom of the eighth. And one of the guys that he faced, who did he face in that eighth inning? It was like the bottom of the order. It was the heart of the order or the bottom of, yeah, no, it was Palacios, Caballero, and Jackson. One of those guys missed a game tying home run by like 3 feet. And then at that point, I was like, it doesn't matter who they bring in after this, they will lose this game.
It was Caballero, as it always is. Yeah. Although, yeah, for some reason, didn't really get a lot of run this series. It ended up being Jose Siri by the end of it. But Caballero is going to be a thorn in our side all year.
Course, yeah. But that was it for me. I saw that and I thought it was gone, and I literally thought the game was tied, and then there was a brief wait. The camera was doing weird stuff on the Yes broadcast, and he returned to the batter's box and went about his business, and then Luke Weaver handled it. And then I was much more relieved when Rizzo padded the lead with that solo shot in the ninth. That was huge. And I was kind of expecting the Clay Holmes on stilts outing. It happens at least a couple times a year against the Rays, I feel.
Yeah.
And he's been so good lately that it was like, okay, on the road in this place where we always fucking lose, where we hate going. Yeah, this is probably buckle up. You know, this is coming, but yeah, that was it for me.
Well, that's why it was you're going to get Clay Holmes outings like that. You just are. That's what happens with closers, even the best closers.
Yeah.
And you got to feel blessed when you win them anyway. So he had a lot of time off, which sounds wild to say, considering this man and Ian Hamilton as well. You want to quibble with their usage. You want to ask for more from them. I hear you. That's a bullpen trust tree issue for me rather than a why isn't Holmes in this game? Because it's not even like Aaron Boone's modern woo-woo philosophy. 17 and a third innings this year, but it was like, and 12 saves already, 17 games out of the first. So they are 27 and 15 right now. They've played 42 games and he's appeared in 17 of them. If he continues to run at almost a 50% clip this year, you know, I don't really want Clay Holmes in 81 games. I don't really want Clay Holmes in 75 games. 66 in 2023, 62 in 2022. That's probably the sweet spot. So you had to slow that pace a little bit to start the year. You don't want the time off to result in rust, and it probably is always going to result in rust. And you gotta try to somehow balance that, and it did this time, obviously. Game logs for the year so far, just so that everyone getting an idea of the usage pattern leading into Friday night. Didn't pitch between May 4th and May 10th. That's a rarity. Prior to that, it was, I mean, the early season Clay Holmes usage, they had to use him three times to secure three of those four wins in the first Astros series. He only appeared once in the Arizona series and only once in the Toronto series and only once in the Miami series. Good stuff. But twice in Cleveland back-to-back days, April 17th in Toronto, April 19th and 20th against the Rays, 23rd against Oakland, 26th against Milwaukee, 29th against the Orioles, May 1st, May 4th. They're trying to calm things down, but May 4th to May 10th, he was off, and he threw 33 pitches. They ultimately 34 pitches, retired DeLuca on a slider away. The metrics match the performance so far. You're never going to have a zero FIP, but zero ERA, 1.58 FIP is about as good as it gets. The issue is not Holmes. He's going to blow some saves too. The hope is that you win some of those blown saves. He's going to have outings where he looks like he did on Friday. The hope is that you win those games anyway. They won this game anyway. That's great. He's going to have some of these appearances. You want to put as many of them in the win column as you can. Which leads us into Sunday, when fandom reared its ugly head for me. The dark side of fandom. I don't think we've talked a little bit about fandom rooted in fanaticism. Is it really that good to know this much about your team and to have so many feelings tied to the performance of this baseball team? Is it really that good to always be a dark cloud? There's always going to be a dark cloud in the back of the mind of every diehard fan, whether it's worthwhile or not. So they shouldn't use Clay Holmes on Sunday. They got to find a way to not use Clay Holmes on Sunday, whether that's a large enough win to avoid going to him or a blowout loss like Saturday is up to the Yankees to decide. But Clay Holmes can't pitch in Sunday's game coming off 33 pitches, and they get the off day today. And I would say you got to use him on Tuesday, no matter the score of that game in Minnesota. But he can't pitch Sunday. Nobody wants to see him pitch Sunday after an extra strenuous effort on Friday. So 6-0 lead, Aaron Judge homers, extends the lead to 6-0 in the fifth. What's my first thought? It's certainly not. Hot streak continues. Way to go, Aaron Judge. Or they're pulling away. You know, who in the back end of the bullpen can they rest today? Or how much can Dennis Santana throw? My first thought is, didn't they blow a 6-0 lead last year in Tampa in May? Didn't it kind of derail their season? Like, didn't it kind of stunt their progress and make you think, like, oh, this team maybe, like, when they were about to take the series in Tampa, you're like, all right, they're turning a corner, and then they blew the final game, the rubber game, and you're like, no, actually, they're behind square one. So that's my first thought. Last year, the game where they blew that lead, first run came off the bat of Jose Siri. It was Garrett Cole on the mound, their ace. Luis Gil has ostensibly been their ace this year, and he's replacing Garrett Cole. Rodon's been great, still kind of their number two. Clark Schmidt's been great, not an ace. I would say Luis Gil is the number one guy you want to see. Must watch television right now, the equivalent to Garrett Cole. So gets out of the fifth scoreless, gets out of the sixth scoreless. I'm starting to relax a little bit. I'm like, all right, I think they'll hold this 6-0 lead, or at the very least, Heel's not going to blow it, and he's not going to blow it right away. Oh, little did I know. Not only did the first runs come off the bat of Siri again, against Cole, it was just two runs that were scored, a solo homer and an additional run. Siri hits a grand slam off Caleb Ferguson, who, can absolutely come into 6-0 games. That's fine. If you need to use him in a 6-0 game, you got to do it. He was coming off 7 scoreless outings, but that was misleading. One of them featured an unearned run in Baltimore. A couple of those scoreless outings, one of them was 7 pitches long. One of them was 4 pitches long, meaning he finished off a couple innings in progress but didn't even have to hit the 3-batter minimum. One of those games, he hit the 3-batter minimum by allowing a hit, a walk, and then a strikeout to get a third of an inning done. Most of those had a couple high-leverage outings at the start of that stretch, and then some low leverage and some, you know, tightrope walks. And then yesterday it all fell apart. Once he loads the bases for Siri, I don't really care that it's a number 9 hitter. I can't go with this lefty who's already plummeted all the way down the trust tree to face anybody with the bases loaded and one out. It's got to be Luke Weaver. And even if he hits a guy on the helmet and then works out of trouble as he did later in the inning, it's still that you're going to get out at 6-1. Weaver could finish the eighth, hand it off to Hamilton in the ninth. I couldn't believe the magnitude of the bullpen meltdown yesterday that somehow got all the way to six. Nick Birdie, by the way, after the bases got cleared on the grand slam, comes in, bases, nobody on the bases, one out, 6-4. It's already dicey enough, but you have a clean slate. You have a fresh opportunity. Walk after an 0-2 count, walk, 1-2 count on the third batter hit by pitch. That is unforgivable. To the point where I've got friends reaching out after the win, and we're going to celebrate the win, and we're going to talk about how this year's team did something last year's team wouldn't have done, and how Gleyber Torres was the most appropriate person possible to deliver that important insurance blow. But I'm not going to forget that bullpen meltdown. It was as ghastly as any you'll ever see. Weaver escaped by the skin of his teeth with a looping line out to right field and an Amed Rosario ground out to short. And then if not for the 6-5 lead becoming 9-5, becoming 10-5, and of course becoming 10-6 for the runner on in the ninth, you would remember that bullpen meltdown for a really long time. And every episode we get on and say, the bullpen ERA is great. You know, the bullpen limits slugging at a top tier degree. This is one of the best bullpens in baseball, but when they need a strikeout, they can't get a strikeout. And when they need a strikeout, they go to Nick Birdie, who great spring training, great first seven outings coming off the IL, the command and control wasn't there before he got hurt. Yesterday was egregious. He can't be your second best swing and miss option, which in many ways leads us into the Ron Marinaccio conversation. How is he not here? They're going to have to hit on two or three of these returning bullpen arms anyway, like Canley and Trevino, who had a setback, and Efros, who's the king of setbacks. Two of those three guys are going to have to contribute this year for the bullpen to come anywhere close to reaching the potential laid out by their current performance. They're going to have to add somebody at the deadline. This is all true. But that means, one, Caleb Ferguson's going to get DFA'd at some point.
Yep.
He just is. If he's trending in this direction and they're going to need to clear out space for all these arms, he is now, in my humble opinion, closer to the chopping block than Dennis Santana, further away from the chopping block than Michael Tonkin, who will go whenever they need someone to go next. But pretty close to that precipice right there. They're going to need to find a more reliable swing and miss option. And it's going to have to come from multiple sources. And one of those sources is Rod Marinaccio, who did not have to get demoted, but was anyway.
Yeah, that sucked. First of all, in terms of Ferguson, I am fine with him pitching with the bases loaded because it's essentially the Yankees building a case on why he shouldn't belong here. If he can't get himself out of that trouble, the Yankees have let a lot of relievers work themselves in and out of trouble, then he's just proving that he will be one of the first DFAs when somebody's able to come back. But
some all-time playing with your food. Like my number one pet peeves. A six-nothing lead, gotta attack the zone.
Yeah, that too. And I mean, we know Aaron Boone always loves to try and steal outs. It rarely ever works. He tried to do it twice by putting Ferguson in. I mean, look, putting Ferguson in there was probably the call. If Ferguson can give you 1.2 innings, if he's decently competent, then that saves the bullpen. But you can't try and seal outs with Birdie coming in after Ferguson. Just can't do that. Nonetheless, like, it's the dossier for Ferguson. It's turning out to not be a good trade acquisition, and the Yankees will have to figure it out. And this is yet another indictment. In terms of fixing the bullpen, look, I know they are trying to utilize as many players with options that they can so they don't have to keep shucking people off the roster and doing the whole merry-go-round. But to do that to Ron Marinaccio is, A, the wrong decision, in my opinion, B, most importantly, not fair. This is somebody who worked his ass off to get back to where he was 2 years ago after completely spiraling last year. We went over the AAA stats, I think, last episode or two episodes ago. He was looking like he'd never pitch for this team again. Unable to control the zone, walking batters at an insane rate, giving up ridiculously hard contact. And we traced it back all the way to when the Yankees do this last, 2022. Ron Marinaccio was one of the most consistent and effective relievers in the bullpen in 2022, and they demoted him that year because he had options and they wanted to make – I forgot who it was they wanted to make space for or save. But it was someone equally ridiculous that didn't need to be here, and the Yankees could have just cut bait early and figured it out. But again, messes with a young player's confidence or, you know, a lesser experienced player's confidence. Why are we doing this? Ron Marinaccio was undoubtedly one of the better relievers in this bullpen in the early going, and a bullpen that's been having a lot of trouble with control, with strikeouts, with getting out of trouble. And he was, to me, a guy who could kind of alleviate all those things. He had issues with walks, but he was able to get himself out of trouble and he would get big strikeouts. And he would erase innings at times. I don't know why. I mean, obviously, yes, if you're going to bring somebody else into the fold and you want Ron Marinaccio to continue to get more work, the move is to send him down to the minor leagues. But, you know, this is a big boy season. This is 2024. This is again, a World Series or bust feel after all the short-term moves the Yankees made in the offseason, and there's no reason to interrupt Ron Marinaccio's hot streak that he's been on. I take issue with this because it's more of the same from the Yankees in terms of allowing mediocre to poor performance to languish and stick around just because it's a more convenient roster move and not rewarding good performance. The turnaround Marinaccio has made did not deserve an option at any point, regardless of what the roster looked like. And if this bullpen was at full strength, you can maybe convince me of it because there were enough names on paper that could potentially be outperforming him at this point. But guess what? The bullpen's very much injured. It's very much inexperienced. It doesn't have all the permanent pieces that it's going to have as we lead up to the trade deadline. And there's a lot of guys that could have just been kicked off and he could have remained.
Yeah. And Marinaccio's final appearance with the Yankees was sort of
awesome.
It was exactly that level of embarrassing though, where you knew, okay, they're going to send him down the next day. It was like, they decided to, he'd been there, one of their top high leverage options for 2+ weeks now.
Yeah.
In his last outing, they were like, against Houston, they were like, how many pitches can we squeeze out of him? You know, what can we do? Cause he's obviously going down tomorrow, for birdie, even though does he have to go down for birdie? No, but based on the internal logic that we've dictated, of course he's going to. He went 2 innings against Houston on May 7th, again, leading to the demotion. Only 24 pitches there, and then 23 pitches in an inning with a hit and a walk, 2 strikeouts against the Astros on May 9th. And that was that. He averaged, you know, he didn't have many easy outings in there, a lot of 20-plus pitch outings. And he gets demoted, and they ask Aaron Boone about it. Here's the Athletic's quote. Though he had been through it so many times before, it wasn't easy news for Marinaccio to take. He was upset, Boone said, understandably. Yeah, I mean, understandably. Absolutely. He knows the options game like the rest of us do, but he also knows that he's out pitching 85% of the bullpen.
Yep.
And that the, you know, second place Yankees, playoff team Yankees, were relying on him to get crucial outs in the 6th, 7th, and 8th innings of close games, something that they were not relying on Caleb Ferguson to do after the first 2 weeks of the season when he was sort of the guy they'd use in extras for some reason. And then luckily got out of an Arizona Diamondbacks jam because he got to face the pitcher with 2 outs, then couldn't do the same against Cleveland. And then they demoted him down the trust tree, fell several rungs, and he's got a 6.43 ERA. And because he's a veteran, even though he's 27, and Marinaccio is, I believe, the same exact age. He's 28 years old. Ron Marinaccio is older than Caleb Ferguson. But he's got options because it took him a while. His collegiate arm, you know, COVID draft. Not COVID draft, but COVID minor league season wiped out. He's older than he probably should be as a young buck. And here we are again. And they're going to have to make another difficult bullpen decision eventually when Gerrit Cole hopefully comes back. They're going to have to move a starter out there or go with a 6-man rotation, which is also interesting. But the 6-man rotation means that somebody in the bullpen's got to go down. You can't carry that many pitchers. And we'll talk about this. But the moment you can't do yesterday's game, you know, we've done 23 minutes of angry yelling about yesterday's game. You can't do yesterday's game without talking about the reason it was different than last year's. One, that Cole blown game goes from 6-0 to 6-2 to 7-6 Rays, right? Luke Weaver comes in and does the job and does not, you know, hits the first batter he faces. Terrifying, 6-4 to 6-5 on his watch, gets the 2 outs to end that inning and dominates the 8th. But the 8th was a little bit easier. It never got from 6-5 to 7-6, crucially, never got tied, crucially, but breathing room in the 8th from 2nd and 3rd, 1 out, Gleyber Torres at the plate, 0-2 count. One of the guys the last couple of years who you'd want in that situation the most, because you know that he can hit one in the air, get you a sacrifice fly. Hit a grounder to the right side, get the one run in, probably. Hasn't been doing too much of that this year. This was the second at-bat this year that felt like Gleyber Torres. The Brewers' bases-clearing double, and yesterday, 3-run homer into the left field seats, followed by a Trevino homer, his 2nd of the game. All credit due to Trevino, Weaver, and Torres for helping save us in this game in a way that look, it would have been impressive enough for the Yankees to punch back with 1 run to go from 6-0 to 6-5 and extend it to 7-5, to go all the way up to 10-5 was sort of just a life-changing exhale. And of course, because they are still the Yankees and the bullpen is still undermanned, it couldn't just be easy to the finish line. And you did need leadoff Yandy Diaz homer off Hamilton, runner on base. You know, we need to get some key outs, and we do. But yeah, without that response, without that incredible response, we're telling a very different story today, and we got to give credit to those guys.
Of course. I was extremely thrilled with Fridays because that game to me was the easiest one. I mean, on the surface, it was the easiest one to cough right back. How many times have we gone into Tampa to lose the first game of the series, and then you're just immediately working out of a hole after a momentum killer on the Friday or the Monday or whatever it is. And Clark Schmidt, come on, man, going 6.2 innings. That was awesome. He was as flawless as can possibly be, in my opinion. I loved his reaction when Boone called to the bullpen and started walking out of the dugout. Schmidt wanted that last out. He wanted to finish that seven innings. In the end, whatever bullpen decisions Boone made were the right ones. The Yankees won the game 2-0. But you have Schmidt's performance, which was just knowing he wasn't getting the offensive support that he probably should have, and took the burden upon himself to limit as much damage as possible. And he tossed 6 2/3 scoreless innings, which is pretty much the best you can possibly do in terms of giving a quality start. And then Rizzo coming through on those two times. Rizzo, who has had a complicated start to the season, very much finding his footing. He gets that clutch 2-out RBI single, and then gives the insurance run in the 9th with the solo shot. I was the happiest for Schmidt, though, because he's worked really hard to get to this point, and very underrated. He's tied with Sonny Gray, which you wrote last week. Well, you wrote he was behind Sonny Gray. And then Friday, Clark Schmidt's quality outing gave him the tied for the most starts since, 2022?
Start of 2023.
Yeah. Start of 2023 with 3 earned runs or fewer. That's incredible. Schmidt hasn't, there hasn't been those ace-like outings where you see 7 or 8 scoreless, but he's giving quality outings. He's allowing the offense to stay in the game and give his team a chance. And outings like this, 6 2/3 scoreless, are going to be what results if he continues to find his footing and keep that confidence. And I thought Friday was a really good stepping stone for him, because anytime you can do this on the road against a division rival, especially a team like the Rays, which never goes away. Doesn't matter how bad they are, they never go away. They'll kill you. They'll ruin your 6 scoreless inning outing by chasing you in the 7th with, 3 straight hits to make it as infuriating as possible. Clark Schmidt battled, earned every bit of that victory. And then props to Rizzo, obviously, for coming through in the clutch when nobody else was going to.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, Rizzo, the turnaround has been very real. Aaron Judge, the turnaround has seemed quite real as well for everyone who counted. And again, the Judge thing is funny because I think you can split the people who are concerned about him into 2 buckets. One, the people who were just outrageously concerned, just like, oh, thanks again, Cashman. Like another long-term contract just down the drain. How could you be dumb enough to pay Aaron Judge? Would have been the same people who, if they'd let him go, would have been like, tarnish my franchise. I can't believe you let Aaron Judge walk to San Francisco. What are you doing? Like, it's the people who are just going to be upset about either direction and who were excited that he was struggling so that they could say, oh, I actually knew it all along. I was the one person who, coming off a 62 home run season, was like, he's immediately going to get worse. I'm smart. I know this is going to happen. So there are those people, right? But then there were the probably slightly more well-reasoned, concerned folks, not concerned trolls, but people who were genuinely concerned. And I would put myself in this bucket. People who were saying I think it was totally reasonable to say he's probably injured. Can't we just acknowledge that he's probably injured? And can we figure out what's wrong with him so that this does not spiral and this does not turn into a full season where he's absent, which I will admit, I am not going to say I wasn't sitting here worried about Aaron Judge. I definitely passed the point probably right about when it turned around, honestly, but probably about 3 weeks ago where I officially was like, all right, I'm not worried about his long-term future. I'm not here saying, like, I was getting in arguments with people who were saying, like, his, you know, that toe injury he had usually actually gets worse year two from year one. I was like, there's no way that's true. But I was having that conversation because we're all trying to figure it out. There were some people who were just like, told you it's over. You know, he was a bust. I knew it. But then there were a lot of us that were saying he's doing things he never does. He's unable to cover the outside part of the plate. Why would that be the case? You know, why isn't he able to drive the ball? Could be the toe, but why can't he cover the outside part of the plate? Why can't he pick up the breaking ball? Could be that he's worried about the midsection. He's worried about deviating from his normal swing pattern because he doesn't want to pull something or tweak something or irritate it any worse than it was already at. That's where I was at. I was definitely worried that there was an underlying condition that we weren't hearing about. And over the last 15 games, hitting 346 with a 769 OPS and six bombs. Last seven games, 9 for 24, four homers, eight RBI, 375 average, only four strikeouts, and some ridiculously hard hit balls. He had some 109 mile an hour liner at the Trop yesterday, I believe. He's basically looked like himself for two plus weeks now, which, one, good, phew, exhale, feels great. But two, I would say lends more credence to the people who were saying there's probably something going on here, and how much longer can we afford for him to just try to work his way out of it without putting him on pause and actually diving deeper into an assessment here. Credit to Judge, credit to the Yankees. If there was something hampering him, it worked itself out and he's now back to normal. And it didn't hurt the Yankees too much, who are 27-15 and would be in first place in many divisions, but aren't because there's a juggernaut atop their division and honestly are just probably trying to get to the playoffs anyway, by any means necessary. So did it tumble the Yankees down the standings? Judge's poor play? No. Is it resolved? It certainly feels like it because we're seeing feats of strength that we were not seeing 2 and 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's been amazing to see that turn. I mean, it's just been an exhale, really. We weren't sitting here being, again, like, oh, can't believe Judge is doing this. It's like, oh, no, can't believe we're letting another injury fester until it's going to be a 6 to 8 week absence, and then we're really screwed. So I guess the mid-spring beat-up was real. We got to consider that to be real for the rest of time. And you look back and you realize, like, not getting those spring reps for a lot of players. You're seeing people like Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell, both of whom who signed late in the year, didn't get a full spring training, among other players we can keep looking at. But Blake Snell's first few starts went rather poorly, and then he got injured, which to me is a direct result of not building up properly. Jordan Montgomery, his first three starts as a Diamondback, or four starts, were terrible. I think he just turned in a really great one over the weekend, but still needs time to get back on track. So perhaps that's all Judge needed. Luis Gil, unreal, dude. Another six scoreless innings, gave up one hit. I don't know how this is happening. I really don't. It's crazy. Oh, I'm sorry. He gave up three hits. It's just crazy how he is, I feel like, not getting the recognition he deserves outside of the Yankees. And even inside the Yankees, like, we need to, sorry guys, hat tip to Brian Cashman again, because Luis Gil could have very well been a player traded this offseason in a few of those deals that they made, or even last year. I understand he underwent Tommy John surgery and he was still recovering, but you did hear rumblings at one point that teams still valued him, especially knowing he was coming off Tommy John, knowing what he was capable of previously, and the Yankees stood pat. They didn't want to move him, and now we're seeing tremendous results from that. I mean, Jose Trevino too, like, everybody thought, we thought, I mean, it still could be the case. It's early in the year, but thought Austin Wells was going to be the guy. Great. Lefty slugging catcher. He's going to be the one to carry the offense. We have backup Trevino managing these games with these younger pitchers incredibly well, stealing some strikes with his framing. But it's been all Trevino. 293 average, 795 OPS. Never in a million years would have expected that kind of production. Even his All-Star year. I know he was red hot in the first half and he petered out, but 248 with a 671 OPS, that was like his best year to date in terms of a full slate of play. Only 25 games under his belt, but the fact that he's been able to take advantage of this incredibly talented lineup that's giving him some padding, really awesome. So this a lot of guys on this team deserve recognition right now.
Agreed. I mean, they won another series in a place where they never win series, and they're doing it. And Austin Wells, like, we all know that the corrective stats, you know, at some point the indicators are that he's going to start hitting and hitting for more power, and the doubles are coming, but he certainly hasn't done anything through his first 65 at-bats to take reps away from Trevino, who's looking every bit of the best case scenario right now. And at some point that will turn, and at some point Wells will have the momentum, I'm sure, and hopefully these guys can get to a solid share of things. In terms of framing, Wells and Trevino are two of the top six catchers, I think, by any measure, yeah. By multiple Fangraphs and Savant had them both in different orders in the top seven. I don't remember if it's top six or top seven. But, you know, neither has the arm right now. Players are running on the Yankees. That's got to change. They got to do whatever they can to maybe – I honestly don't even know how you fix that, increase the pop time or awareness or what have you. But the other elements of catching, both are rated very highly. And all of a sudden, somehow both are providing solid defense, again, outside of caught stealing. Trevino's bat has been way more potent than we anticipated. So I guess, I mean, surprising moments, there are just a trillion. There, every moment has been surprising, essentially. But if we're going... The most surprising thing I saw over the weekend was Jamai Jones's homer, but not the homer on Sunday as much as the reaction to it. Baseball's a business, and everyone was very quick to remind me of that when I just put out some musings that the DFA decision, which will eventually come probably, yeah, is going to be tougher than we anticipated. That article was not intending to say that it was actually going to be weighed, like the Yankees were actually going to sit in the front office and go, we need a roster spot for DJ LeMahieu, but the clubhouse really loves Jones. I think we're going to DFA LeMahieu. Like, that was not the conversation. It was just the thought of they're going to have to make this decision. Jamai Jones is going to lose this roster spot, and he's going to lose it sooner rather than later. And when that happens, it will have been a surprisingly difficult decision. More is going to go into it than we thought. He lost his father at a young age. He hit his first career home run yesterday on Mother's Day. The team was ecstatic for him. And maybe some of it had to do with that personal trauma and things they knew that we didn't. But he got a hug coming back out to left field. This was his second start of the year. He entered the game with seven at-bats, I believe. It's May 13th.
Yep.
Got the hug from Aaron Judge in the outfield. The bullpen gave him an ovation. He got to the dugout and barked with Verdugo, who I know you're about to touch on. This is not to say that the Yankees are going to reconsider their roster plans because of emotional hangups, or they'll find another way to sneak LeMahieu onto the roster, let alone Oswald Peraza, let alone Jason Dominguez. This is just to say that I was surprised by how emotional the Jamai Jones stuff was,
yeah,
and that's going to be a tougher pill to swallow than I thought when they do have to let him go.
Yeah, that was nice to see. Maybe he is like a really good vibes guy. Who knows? And maybe that keeps the Yankees from DFAing him. I don't know. I mean, there's
that was the surprise. The surprise was how good a vibes guy he is.
Yeah.
Not like, of course, his time will come and maybe he clears waivers, because I don't think many teams are looking at Jones being like, we got to take the Yankees vibes guy. Like, you have to use a major league roster spot on him, and that's tough. And so if he clears waivers and goes to AAA, I would. I would say the most likely outcome is he goes back to AAA with the Yankees, but it'll be a slightly tougher decision vibes wise than I gave them credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, just wondering what's going on with Verdugo. He's 0 for 16 in his last 16 at bats. I don't know what the deal is. He was he got the day off on Sunday, so he's got double day off before the Yankees take on the Twins on Tuesday night. Weird, because every other player who's been stuck in a horrid slump, from Gleyber Torres to Aaron Judge to Anthony Rizzo to Anthony Volpe, they've all played through. I think Torres has gotten one day off. I don't even know if – oh, no, Judge got the double day off the one time, but that was purely for him getting off his feet, not because he was slumping. Rizzo,
Torres got two-thirds of a day off on Saturday.
Yeah.
Came in and pinch hit, and everybody, other content creators, were angry about that. And I don't think that's a stunning indictment of Boone's lack of accountability, but it was, you know, throwing him right back into the phone. Here's the day off to clear your head, and actually, we need you. Sorry. Which is sort of an indictment of the Yankees bench rather than their process to me.
Yeah. I would agree. I'm not going to be too harsh on that. They're thin right now, somehow surviving with this crew. But yeah, Verdugo, historically adorable guy, kind of has that personality to bust out of a slump without needing a day off. And Boone gives him the day off. Just hoping nothing else is happening there, because this is a pretty uncharacteristic slump for him. He's only struck out three times in those 16 at-bats, but his numbers have kind of plummeted. Slash lines now 243, 329, 397. So all of a sudden, we're talking about him being the absolute difference maker. 6 days ago, when he kicks the crap out of Verlander on Tuesday, and now the numbers have – I think he was hitting 275 at that point with a 470-something slugging. Now we're looking at a very different version of him. So just hope nothing's up. Because he's usually super consistent, doesn't strike out a lot, puts bat on ball, constantly coming into the game with energy. And the fact that he got the double day of rest either tells me that Aaron Boone was super concerned, or he had enough confidence, I guess, in this team to drop 10 runs on Sunday without Verdugo. But yeah, just something to keep an eye on, because that's pretty uncharacteristic.
Yeah, 0 for 16 and 3 for his last 25. Doesn't K much and struck out three times on Friday, which I think is the telling stat. So,
yeah,
like you said, down to 243, 329, 726 OPS. And that'll get you columns like Bob Clapish, NJ.com 2 days ago. Yankees' Jason Dominguez could spell end for Alex Verdugo. I just, man, I love discourse. No fun to talk with my friends, but Jason Dominguez's return, which will hopefully be relatively soon and relatively impactful, will not spell the end for Alex Verdugo. Unless you mean long term, in which case no one really thought Alex Verdugo was re-signing here anyway. But no, I'm pretty confident that, man, you want to put the Yankees don't make emotional decisions to the test? Tell them after the first month and a half of this season, where everyone's talking about the dogs and Verdugo's given them the first legitimate defensive presence they've had in left field in years, and has also had some big offensive moments outside of this slump. You tell them, by the way, you got to trade him in June to make room for Dominguez. You got to DFA your starting left fielder on a second place team, on an early surprise team. And one of the most impactful members of the clubhouse. You just got to get rid of him by any means necessary. Like, that would be an all-time test for the Yankees acting businesslike and emotionless. And I would say that's probably a breaking point. I do not think there is a world in which they DFA or trade Verdugo, even if Dominguez comes up and is healthy and great. I would wager they would probably find a way to keep both. I would also wager that will probably work itself out. If you've stopped girding yourself with the Giancarlo Stanton injury, you should probably start girding yourself again, because he is unlikely, knocking on wood, but unlikely to make it all 162 without a hiccup. So this will all work itself out.
Yes, it sure will. Well, I mean, what? I guess if he's like, no, I'm not even going to entertain it.
It's not worth entertaining. It's just this team is 12 games over 500. It's mid-May. The Orioles are as good as we thought they were. There's not much to talk about. The Yankees and Orioles have both been pretty great, not really showing many cracks in the foundation yet. Yeah. So let's talk about Alex Verdugo. Yeah,
the only discussion to me is like, how do you apportion the reps if Dominguez comes back and is the full version of himself? Because will Verdugo take a demotion to fourth outfielder? Like, is that the conversation we have to have? Does that mean Giancarlo Stanton gets less playing time as the DH? If we're going to insert one of those guys in there. Does that mean we bench Juan Soto just for the sake of getting other, but no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it gets, you know, you start thinking about what might happen, but yeah, trading an impact player like that, especially when what have we been complaining about all these years is the lack of a bench, the lack of guys with like an ability to pinch hit, the lack of an ability for or the lack of a presence of experienced like veteran players who are battle tested. And regardless of who is on the bench at that point, like you'll be checking multiple boxes by having Verdugo on the bench or Dominguez on the bench. In terms of building that championship squad of, yeah, funny discourse topic that I'm not willing to entertain right now.
No.
But I just did. So
we
jokes
just
on me.
For a couple of minutes. Yeah.
But I just problem. Did. So there you go. Discourse wins. Discourse one, me zero. Moment you might have missed in this series. For me, I can go quick. Juan Soto, no impact. Not that I care. Not that I think that that matters. But 1-for-12 in the series, he drove in one run on a sac fly. He logged one hit. Guess what? It was going to happen soon enough, right? The guy's been our entire offense for most of the year. I was happy to see it. You knew the slump. You knew a little bit of a downturn was coming at some point. And what happened as a result? The Yankees didn't fold. Everybody else stepped up. The Yankees won 2 out of 3 games. They scored, what, 20 runs, 19 runs. They scored 14 runs. They put 10 runs. They put 10 runs up in the finale. Soto was essentially a non-factor the whole series, and they were able to squeak out 2 wins against a team that usually gives them trouble. So props to the entire team, you know, not just the offense, but the pitching staff for being able to hold things together for the most part, knowing that their best hitter was not producing the runs that he's usually been for this team. He's been the driving force for the offense. He's been setting the table for other guys. And that was not the case in this series. But the Yankees managed to pull it off. So I don't know if that was entirely, I mean, there are a lot of other storylines here to kind of just push Soto into the background. So I'm sure people realize that he wasn't on the base pass and he wasn't knocking in runs or anything like that. But 1-for-12 stretch. That might be his worst stretch of the season so far.
And I'm going to say Anthony Volpe too. Like,
yeah,
ended up going 5-for-14 in this series with a triple, knocked in a couple runs, 9 for his last 30, 2 homers, 3 walks, the average up to .265, the OBP at .350, OPS of .764. Totally acceptable. We're riding the roller coaster so far this year with basically everyone. And a bad 4 games can push Alex Verdugo from top of the mountain to, is he going to lose playing time to Jason Dominguez in a couple weeks? Like, that's where we're at. But Anthony Volpe also sort of didn't get a lot of the headlines because Sunday's game was so crazy, but really good series, really good week, needs to keep building. I'll also just say Lou Trevino shut down with elbow inflammation kind of silently on Sunday, about 3 hours before game time, while all of us were thinking about the rubber game, thinking about the Knicks, and thinking about the Rangers. He's apparently in week 2 of a 3-to-4 week shutdown. Even more silently.
Secretive, of course.
Even more silently than I was giving them credit for doing something silently. Already in week 2 is a good time to announce. If you're power ranking the weeks where it's good to announce a shutdown, a 3-to-4 week shutdown, week 2 got to be number 1. Week 3 got to be the week 4, probably the worst. Like, he's already been shut down for 3 weeks and you're like, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot. He's only got 1 more week, then you'll see him again. But week 1 probably is when you want to do that, though, for full transparency. So power ranking what the best feeling one is, it's probably week 2. But for information accuracy, probably week 1. I already said it earlier. They need to hit on 2 of the 3 returning relievers. Kainley, Trevino, Efros. 2 of those 3 guys need to have a significant impact. They need to trade for a swing and miss option. Maybe a rental. Maybe like Ryan Helsley. Maybe you want to scout. Maybe you want to get somebody on the cheap. Maybe you want to bring back Marinaccio. Then all of a sudden you've got four additional reliable options who can slowly but surely replace Tonkin, Ferguson, Dennis Santana. You might need to replace Nick Birdie at that point in time. I am not asking for too much here, I don't think. But I don't think it's wild because the bullpen has been so good at limiting power, at limiting earned runs. But maximizing comfort, being able to, you know, dance around runners on the bases, knowing that you can get a strikeout when you've got second and third one out rather than a soft game-tying grounder, they have not been fantastic in those endeavors. And so, celebrate the low ERA, but don't get complacent. They're going to need to change a lot of those names as the season goes on. And if there's one thing I have faith in them actually doing, it's that. Yeah. But they do have tasks ahead of them. The bullpen is not set. And that brings us to the final debate. The bullpen's not set for many reasons. But another reason is because Gerrit Cole, hopefully, ideally, is going to come back at some point. They should at least plan like he is going to come back. They should at least approach the deadline like he's not going to come back.
Yeah.
They should approach the deadline like we need one starter in addition to the guys that we have, and it's going to need to be a starter that we can count on. But let's say Cole comes back to a fully healthy five-man unit, which features Marcus Stroman, whose command has been off lately but has largely managed to pitch through it, Nestor Cortez, who's been much better at home than on the road, Luis Gil, and Clark Schmidt, two people who have theoretically, Schmidt has thrived as a reliever. Gil has the profile to thrive as a reliever, though we talk about his control issues every episode. But both have done more than enough to stay in a five-man rotation right now. So Gil is the obvious choice to move to the bullpen if you want to limit his innings, but you're also taking out an ace-type pitcher when you do that. So Gil limiting his innings in the bullpen versus Nestor becoming the long man that the Yankees don't totally have right now in the bullpen because Luke Weaver has almost become a Michael King or become an eighth inning guy. He was supposed to be the, okay, it's a blowout, we need someone to soak up three innings. Or, okay, they're up 7-2, we need someone to cover the sixth, seventh, and eighth. That was Weaver. Now he's too valuable. I would argue they need a guy like that, and I would argue that should be Nestor Cortez. That is the way I'm leaning now. And when we're talking about limiting innings, don't forget that Cortez was also injured last year. Luis Gil is not the only guy who needs to have his innings limited at some point this year. It'll work itself out, I'm sure. But honestly, I feel like Nestor might be the guy to have to go to the bullpen prior to the trade deadline when they do bring in a reinforcement.
Yeah, man, this is tough for me. Right now, if I have to make the decision, if I'm Aaron Boone, I'm putting Nestor in the bullpen. I am. That's what my instincts tell me. I love Nestor Cortez, but I'm going to be harsh on him right now. To me, this season, it has felt like he has acted like he's better than he is. And that's not an insult. It's just kind of knowing your role. Like, Nestor Cortez has never been an ace. Again, one good season. How many did he even do a full slate of starts that one year that he was an all-star, 2022? No?
I'm checking. I bet he got to 30 starts. Yeah, 28.
Very good season from Nestor Cortez. Outside of that, bad, half starter, half reliever with good results. Really good year as a starting pitcher last year, 12 bad starts and then injured. This year he's coming back from a shoulder injury, and every mistake that he makes, he pouts on the mound visibly. Body language is terrible. And then you have his start on Saturday where he's just constantly irked by the umpires. And at this point, I am fed up with everybody on the Yankees getting into it with umpires. The umpires are bad across every single game. Follow any Twitter account that monitors umpire behavior. Follow any team fan account that tracks what the umpires are doing on a daily basis. They are making bad calls behind the plate. They are making bad calls in the field. They are prematurely ejecting people. This is what life is at this point. So to act as if you're the victim in these situations now, that's what the lesser team does. That's what the team who makes excuses does. And Nestor Cortez whining about not getting his calls on the outside corner, enough is enough. Nestor Cortez is a number three starting pitcher as his ceiling. That's just what the fact is. He doesn't have enough of a track record in Major League Baseball to tell us otherwise. And this year, it's admirable that he's actually come back nicely from the shoulder injury, because the shoulder issues are typically very, very difficult to rebound from that quickly. He's done a solid job this year, but he's leaving a lot of innings on the table. He's making far too many mistakes, and he's getting down on himself, and he's blaming outside circumstances far too often, and it needs to stop, especially if this guy wants to pitch in the rotation in the playoffs. My assessment right now, Luis Gil has handled himself much better, and that's just there. It's not even close. Luis Gil, you want to talk about getting into trouble. The man gets into trouble. He doesn't let pressure phase him. He doesn't let a bad decision phase him. Nestor Cortes, who's been in the league for 6 years longer than Luis Gil has, is pitching and acting like the rookie right now. So this is not – I don't want somebody on this team in the playoffs who's easily flappable. You know, the mistakes in this game were egregious too. You have a home run to the first batter of the game. You walk the nine hitter 2 innings later and then give up a 3-run homer to Randy Arozarena, who's been ice cold this season. Like, this is not, you know, if you think you're an ace and you think you're pitching like an ace, this is not how an ace behaves. And these are not the mistakes an ace makes. So I am moving Nestor Cortes to the bullpen right now. His stuff plays better in the bullpen, if you ask me. If you have a ton of flamethrowers in the rotation, which we in theory do, Gerrit Cole comes back, he's your top guy. Then you have Carlos Rodon. Clark Schmidt throws pretty hard. And then Heel in this instance is throwing absolute gas. Marcus Stroman's your deceptive weapon that you use in the rotation. So
he's not moving to the bullpen.
No, he's not moving to the bullpen. And guess what? His deceptive stuff is much better than Nestor's. And that's just the way it is. I would love for him and Nestor to attack hitters a little bit more, because they have, I think they're super talented pitchers, and they've gotten in their own way this season, in my opinion, more times than not. But right now, Nestor Cortes needs to wake up and know what and understand what his situation is. He is not a number one or a number two starter. He probably will never be that. And he needs to just give this team length, and he needs to keep them in the game. Doing what he did on Saturday, doing what he did against the Orioles, absolutely not.
And it's not like he doesn't have experience in the bullpen. That's 2022, it blinded us, and rightly so. 50 fewer hits allowed than innings pitched, right? All-star appearance, face of the rotation somehow with Gerrit Cole in it. I mean, there's a reason why we view him as a starter, but he was a swingman at best through 2021. Won a spot in the rotation and dominated that year, but he will need an innings reset at some point as well. It should probably come in the form of, you are the long man. It is you. He would have been great up 6-0 the 7th, 8th, and 9th yesterday.
Yep.
That would have been ideal. Luis Gil, his last 18 1/3 innings, has allowed 6 hits. He's only struck out 13. That's also encouraging in some ways. The fact that Gil keeps dominating these lineups with elite stuff, and we know he has the ability to be elite in the swing and miss department, but in these games where teams are technically impacting, he's not going 6 innings, 12 Ks. You know, they're impacting him more than you'd think if all you did was watch the highlights and the pitching ninja and his best stuff. Yeah. And he still managed to, A, limit hard contact, B, limit base hits entirely. Those go hand in hand, obviously, but it's not like it's a bunch of soft dunks. Limiting hard contact, limiting hits, and he's not getting as many Ks as someone with elite stuff like him should you think would, and he still managed to keep traffic off the bases to an historic degree. He's walking guys. He is not allowing hits. And I just think you got to ride that hot hand as long as you can. And you want to have that hot hand available for October, but why willingly interrupt that? And also, I don't know why we only talk about innings limits for Heel instead of Heel and Nestor Cortes.
Yeah.
Coming also off injury. That same reality.
Yeah. Look, this could turn on a dime. Nestor Cortes could deliver a month of incredible baseball, which he's done previously, and we could be eating our words. But
yeah,
we have to make the decision now. I'm moving him to the bullpen. The stuff plays better. There's use for this, you know. Luke Weaver is an incredibly valuable piece of this team. Having two of those would be incredible. And then you look at Nestor's Savant page. I haven't looked at Luis Gil, so let me pull these up side by side. But Nestor's is not great. So, like, if you're sitting here thinking like maybe he should be putting in better performances than he is, really, no. His expected ERA, expected batting average, and walk percentage are the only red aspects of his baseball savant page. Fastball velo, we know that was going to be low. Average exit velocity, 27th percentile. Chase rate, 40th percentile. Whiff percentage, 41st percentile. K percentage, 56th. Barrel percentage, 60th. Hard hit, 39th percentile. Ground ball rate, 8th percentile. I don't know if what is extension? Who cares about extension? Why is this on here? Idiotic. Luis Hill, on the other hand, on top of getting results, like on surface level stats, page is entirely red with the exception of chase rate, 12%. I think that's because he's been super erratic with his control. Yeah. Walk percentage, that's his number one flaw right now. He walks far too many batters. And ground ball rate, which is bad, but guess what? It's 25 percentage points better than Nestor's. Everything else, red. 60%, 70%, 75% or better. So that to me, looking at this right now, there's no reason to move him out until you absolutely have to if you're concerned about injury or innings limits. But also, like you said, yeah, a good amount of these guys should have innings limits, especially someone like Marcus Stroman, who has to be a little bit monitored because of his injury history. We look back when Marcus Stroman turned in his first six inning outing of the year, which was early on when the season started. That was his first such since mid-July. Marcus Stroman doesn't need an innings limit, but he does need to be monitored in some capacity because injuries have naturally limited him to not a whole lot of work. Since 2019, he's only pitched in more than 180 innings once. It's a long time. So he's not giving you that number two, that number three workload, essentially. Him and Nestor are really back-end guys, which is great because guess what? You need good back-end guys to lengthen the rotation. You need good back-end guys to put forth a World Series pitching staff, World Series-esque pitching staff. So that might be their roles, and they should be fine with that.
Cody Poteet, where are you?
Yeah,
love to see you. Come hang out. Yeah, I think Nestor to the bullpen is the move, not the permanent move.
No.
And also, speaking of Luis Hill and chase rate, like you'd have to be wearing a blindfold to chase.
You'd have to be swinging out a pinata.
You'd have to be wearing a blindfold to chase some Luis Hill stuff. I mean, some of those changeups start in the zone and dart out, but most of them start at one corner, go to the other corner, and the stuff he misses the plate with, like, yeah. You're a non-participatory baseball player at this juncture if you're swinging and missing at those. But hey, embrace debate. It's always fun. We might have a different answer to this question in 2 weeks' time. But for now, I think we're pretty aligned, both in the same spot. And it's fun to be able to have these conversations coming off another series win. Keep banking them. Can't take these 27 wins away, 27-15. Let's keep moving forward. The Red Hot Twins and the hotter than you'd want them to be, but still the White Sox wait around the corner for these Yankees. You'll see the White Sox at the stadium over the weekend. Pretty fun weekend matchup. If you want to get tickets, I will be away. I'd love to go, but I think I'm going to go to the Mariners. I think I'm going to go see the Mariners next week. Fun upcoming schedule for these Yanks. And again, 27 wins, can't take that away. 27 rings, can't take those away either. Food for thought. Interesting to ponder. I'm Adam Weinrib. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Weinrib. The Yanks, you can find them at Yankees, I believe. But Yanks Go Yard FS is where we are. Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
Yep. I'm at Tommy's_takes. Head on over to yanksgoyard.com, everybody. Lots of content there. We're having a good time. We appreciate you guys tuning into the podcast, reading our articles. We're having a good start to the season. I know some of these podcasts are a little bit critical, but we are happy. The results are great. Just having the discussion about, you know, the minutia and everything that has to be figured out before this team takes on the best of the best in October baseball. That's constantly what we're looking ahead to. But right now, we're in a good spot for the most part. Feeling good about it. We got the Twins tomorrow, off day today. Kick back, relax, enjoy after that long weekend. We'll talk to you again Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern live, right here during an afternoon game. Yankees and Twins will face off 1 o'clock on Thursday. So, we'll either be having a fun time during a rubber match, we'll be really upset with a series loss, or we'll be prematurely celebrating a series win. I love
it. Join us If I do one more note, I have to pay for it, so I won't. But we will be live during the game. See you then, Thursday, 2 o'clock Eastern. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.